Tansay, hello and welcome. You're listening to the Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Trombley and it's Sigatsun. On today's show, I'm honored to speak with Tantu Carnell from Anzac, Alberta. Welcome to the show, Tantu.
Hi, Daniel. Hey, Wind Speaker people.
What was life like growing up within Anzac, Alberta?
Well, depends on the day, I guess. I often think that it was like I was raised 100 years ago because Anzac was very different when I first got there. I don't know how old I was, very young, maybe three, somewhere between three to four, somewhere in there, because I was born in Fort McMurray. And at that time, there wasn't even a road built up to the Air Force Base. And the Air Force Base is not even there anymore. That's how far back it goes. I remember seeing a steam engine. And I remember when the engine was changed to whatever it was next. Was it diesel? And then seeing that whole railroad line and sort of become something else altogether, and seeing all the land all cut up the way it never was when I was a kid. I remember people had horses then, and not the little flybys that you see all over the place now. And so at the time that I was growing up, it was pretty free. I mean, there was a little store there, Willow Lake Mercantile, that was first, in my recollection, it was first owned by old man R.K. Martin, who was a school teacher, who is the same guy who taught my aunts and uncles, and maybe even my mother, I don't know. And it was a one-room schoolhouse with a oil barrel in the back as a wood stove, and the big boys, my late brother uncle Harold, was one of the big guys, and they used to keep the fire going. And so, you know, from there to by the time I left Anzac when I was 15. To go to high school in Edmonton, there were three buildings. One was for the younger grades, and then for the medium grades, and then the higher grades, grades 7 to 9. And Mr. Walter, the Mennonite people were there with a dormitory, and so kids were coming in from down the line. Community so small, they didn't have a school, so they would came in on the train, and they'd go home every 2 weeks, and there'd be a long weekend. They'd come back on Monday. They'd leave on Friday. They'd come back on Monday, so that gave them a full weekend at home with the family. And they're the ones that really inspired me to try to keep the Cree that I had. Because Cree was already disappearing a lot in the community. A lot of the kids weren't speaking it, and Mom spoke Cree to me. Mom, my grandmother. And so, you know, I retained a certain amount of that, and the kids that came in from down the line, they were thick Cree speakers, and they made it sound like so much fun that they were really a great influence. Me that I can remember. A lot of bush, you know, when I was growing up, I remember a lot of just about spending a lot of time in the bush and, you know, having conversations with my imaginary friends. And it was, you know, it seemed like a solitary life when I think about it, but it was very rich. What I consider the trails and the travels that I've been on were a lot of it is very solo. You know, this life is quite solo in terms of what's required in being able to move from place to place to place to place and move from people to people to people to community and never really in one place. And then the trick is to maintain, okay, where is my place? And when I went back to ANZAC when I turned 30, I saw that even the houses I grew up in were gone. And went around the corner too, I thought, well, maybe the hill will be there where the house that we lived in by the lake, maybe it'll still be there. I went around the corner, it was just a muddy parking lot. And so a lot of changes, but what that trip kind of gave to me is the ANZAC I knew was gone. And so I had to make my home wherever I could. And so that created a relationship with the earth. So that wherever I was on the earth, I had to feel a sense of home. So that's what I started working on after that.
Yeah. And of course,
so I don't know. Did that tell you anything?
Yeah, that honestly, you know, as you said, you know, like it almost sounds like home is where the heart is, right? Like, you know, that sense of, you know, going back to where your roots are. You get a sense of, you know, the houses that were used to be there may not be there no more, but the memories there will last a lifetime. And, you know, I have to ask, you know, growing up within ANZAC, right, you touched a little bit about your grandmother that taught you Cree. Was she one of your many big role models within the early starts of your life that helped shape you to the person that you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. She was a great storyteller. I just loved when she would tell a story. And that's a big part of how I grew up in ANZAC, because we didn't have any television. We didn't, we had radio. We lived at the forestry for the first part of my life. And so there was forestry radio, but there was the AM/FM radio, and I always remember my brother and uncle coming home after school and heading right to these stories that they had on the radio. And also the way people lived back then is that somebody come over and visit. It could be somebody who lived down the line. And they would come, and when they visited, it could be for, you know, a couple of days or a week. They might pitch a tent down there by the tracks or somewhere near, and relatives would catch up and visit. I always remember my brother and uncle going down to Joe Cardinal's place. He'd been down to the poker game, and I remember Mom asking him, who was there and, you know, how the game was. And he just started doing everybody that was sitting around the table. He was dealing the cards, and he just, by the way he dealt the cards, you knew who was dealing, how much they were betting, and who was, and who was, you know, just, he told things in a way that was just alive. And that's how people told stories back then. It's just alive. They were there. And that's the richness and the wealth that I had as a kid growing up. And that's what I always missed. Always missed. And that's why language is so important to me. So that, you know, to be able to at least keep a remnant of that within, inside of myself, even though you don't get an opportunity to share that with people, because that's so long ago and so far back that, you know, the younger people these days, they don't even really know what mm-hmm. that world was. So I don't know, it's just kind of like a rumlass. It's like kind of a sap that's a part of my blood that's always there, and it doesn't go away. And so whenever I hear Cree or even hear Dene, I didn't learn any Dene when I was a kid. But to hear it just brings so much back. in terms of who was sitting there. And then it kind of developed in me this thing of listening and trying to figure out what they were saying without knowing the language. And that was kind of fun for me as a kid. So that was my TV, I guess. And my brother was really key to me too, because he got so much going on. He played music. He was self-taught. He taught himself how to play guitar. And he had a stutter, but he didn't stutter when he was singing. And I think, I don't know, that may have been a real big impulse. And he got things going around the community. This is before any sports programs or anything. I mean, he was an organic guy around the community that got dances going, got guys in the boxing. You know, the bulldozers are coming and building the roads, so that kind of knocks trees all over and kind of, you know, the trees tumble down in all kinds of shapes. And there's this shape that's all together. It's just sort of like an oblong boxing ring. And I think it was him that got a set of boxing gloves for Christmas. But there was only one set of boxing gloves, so the opponents had to have one boxing glove each, and we were all sitting around there on the logs and the trees surrounding this boxing match that was going on. I mean, there was all kinds of ways of getting some entertainment going when you live in a community like that. There was not much, and this was before there was no drugs around. And if anybody bought any booze in, it would be gone in no time. But, you know, it was sort of an isolated community in that way. And so there was, it's almost brief, but it was foundational. It was so, it was such a part of my foundations as a kid that it's always stayed with me, and I won't let it go. So there's a lot of changes on top of that, for sure.
And with that, you know, helping to shape you into the person that you are today, can you take us back to when, you started your career within acting and directing and writing and getting to that career and all those steps beforehand?
Well, I always had the people who raised me in mind. And so I never went to theater school. I just, thank God I got out of high school. And I never wanted to go back into any of their institutions, because it was my intention to get rid of as much programming that had been placed into me that I was just, I don't know if I was terrified or just belligerent. I don't know. I could not put myself back into the institutes. And it was my determination that I would learn organically. I would learn from the people around. I would learn from picking it up. That's the way I learned as a kid, like picking it up by visualization and experience. And so that's how I chose to do it, and always placed my faith in creative force. And I owe to creative force that I am alive today, and that it has turned out to be a life path. And I went into it because I was enraged by the way that we were portrayed and the way we were treated in society. And so I was just trying to find something inside of myself that I could contribute to change, because that's what was going on in the early 60s, eh? That was it was almost like the earth was breathing change. It's all over the planet. there was this global reaction going on, that change had to happen. And the people that I was seeing in the city, in Edmonton, were, you know, people starting friendship centers, and the Métis Association, and the Indian Association, and the Voice of Native Women Society, and the Communication Society, and they're just alive with people making changes. And so I wanted to contribute whatever it is that I could, so I just started volunteering here and there and this and that, and acting was one of the things that came up, like a duck to water, and so that's what I kept up, because that was the only thing that I had that I could contribute with.
That was Tantu Carnell from Anzac, Alberta. You're listening to the Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, I sit down and chat with Sheila Norris from Calgary, Alberta. You know, let's go back to the very beginning. Let's talk about your roots that you have, that you're connected to a very familiar Métis settlement that I'm familiar with Buffalo Lake Métis Settlement. Can you talk a little bit about the roots and the connections there?
So that's my dad's family. So my dad is Ernie Whitford. He is was an Indigenous artist, a wood carver, and as he wasn't really proud of being Indigenous when I was growing up. So I wasn't brought up in my culture a lot. But then he got involved with another Native artist, and it kind of brought him out of his negativity and brought him into something more. My younger sister was brought up more with the culture than I was. So as an adult, I started wanting my children to have their culture. So I connected with the organization Indigesteam with my son through their camps, and I became a volunteer with them. So Buffalo Lake, that's just where my dad comes from. So,
and of course, you know, with that connections to Buffalo Lake on your dad's side, growing up, did you have any role models, whether that be your cookums or your mushums or your aunties or your uncles or your mom or your dad, of course, that helped shape you into the person that you are today?
My whole family is very family-orientated, and that's kind of where who I am is. It's important for family connection. So we did a lot of things as a family. So that's mostly like how we did things. I had my uncle guide us, kind of thing, but it wasn't really culturally based.
And of course, now, you know, with that being said as well, you know, we're going to transition into, you know, going fast forward now. Before you got into the executive role, did you always know that you were going to become a leader within places like, you know, the CIRFS? And of course, you know, with Orange Shirt Day coming up and the Truth Reconciliation Day coming up this month, can you talk about the inception of the CIFRS and your thoughts on how much it's grown today?
Well, I became a volunteer with CIFRS, and I just started as a volunteer, so they put a call out for volunteers, and they're a partner with Indigesteam, so I joined their board, and then, so the first walk that they had in 2019 was about 150 people. Last year's walk grew to 6,000 people, so our reach is becoming more and more, and this year they offered me the position of executive director with them. This year we are doing two things. We're doing our walk and our gathering on the 30th, but throughout the month of September we are also hosting a residency, exhibits, workshops, and a community art project with the partnership of Sparrow Art Space, which is owned by one of our board members, Sandra.
And of course, you know, when you became a part of the CIFRS, you know, and what it is now today, going from, you know, a small number to, you know, over 6,000 people walking, when you saw that happen with your own two eyes, what thoughts came to mind?
So we believe in our vision, which is, it's called Let's Get Real. So what we do is we promote reconciliation, empowerment, awareness, and leadership through arts and culture. So I was very proud, and I am very proud to be part of this organization, because we want to make sure that Indigenous artists are represented, but we also want to be the bridge of reconciliation. So we want to make sure that Indigenous and non-Indigenous people know the truths and know the histories and do things to make the world a better place.
And of course, you know, I'm very familiar with both Joyce Healy, who you get to work alongside with, as well as Diana Frost from Colliery Forward, you know, and the things that you guys have done, especially with, you know, your interactions alongside many other organizations within the city of Calgary, you know, when you guys are out at Princess Island Park, the one thing that I remember fondly was that seeing everybody go hand in hand in Princess Island Park, and they did a round dance together. That was the largest round dance I've ever seen in my own, with my own two eyes. When you saw that, if you were there, what was your reaction to see something like that? Not only just with Indigenous people, but with non-Indigenous people as well, in unison, wearing the orange shirts and showing the support towards the cause.
It truly touched my heart. We brought last year. We brought a bunch of Indigenous people to do interactive things. Like we had Stacey De Silva. She was teaching dancing. We had Chantal Shugna with her drums and brought the kids up with her drums and was teaching drumming. We want the connection to community, because it's not just about Indigenous people. It's about everyone, and it's bridging that gap. Right, and getting the conversation started.
And of course, you know, you touched a little bit about, you know, with your family, how there was little to no involvement within cultural activities. But now with where you're at in life, you're getting more involved with the culture side. And of course, that all started as well with, you know, with the CIFRS, but also your little ones who wanted to go into an amazing camp with Indigenous Theme, which is also spearheaded by Rob Carnell and the amazing team members such as yourself. Can you talk about how you got involved with the program because of your little ones, and of course with the experiences that you've had since you've started to now with Indigenous Theme?
Absolutely. So my son is autistic, and in grade 7 he was struggling with belonging somewhere, and a teacher offered him to go to Indigenous Theme's Power to Choose camp, which is a science camp that's run out of the University of Calgary. And so he went, and he came back just enthralled with robotics, enthralled with medicine. He just was like very happy that he had a place to belong. And one of our members, Logan Arcilla, he took him under his wing and said, "Hey, why don't you come and be on my robotics team?" And that started a whole, I don't know, our whole family being involved with Indigenous Theme. My youngest son, he is also very much into the science, technology, engineering, and math. And so it brought me into it as a volunteer. And in that, it made such connections with me, because they had elders that would come and teach various things. At one of the camps, we were taught how to put up a teepee in the proper way. Elders would be talking with us. They would bring elders in and talk with the kids, which touched my soul and made it so that I wanted to be more immersed in culture. So this year, I became the executive director of Indigenous Theme as well. That way, I'm giving to community.
And with giving to community as well, you know, with Indigenous Theme, have you seen an influx of many young generations coming into in both Indigenous Theme and, of course, with many others that you're involved in to get also in touch with the culture, the language, and the teachings that follow?
Absolutely. So Indigenous Theme, their belief is two-eyed seeing. So it's the Indigenous side of knowing, but it's also bringing the Western side in. And this year, it grew quite a bit. We usually only hold 1 week of summer camp, and it's an overnight camp with youth from grade 4 to grade 12. And this year we actually had to, because we had an influx in registration, we had to run 3 weeks of camp. So we ran a day camp with overnight camp. We ran a week of robotics camp and then another week of day camp. So it has became more than what we expected in such a short time. Indigenous Teams Reach is actually going across the country. So we have sent a few of our staff members to different areas like Ontario and up into the Yukon, where we're bringing our robotic powwow to represent traditional ways of knowing and also tech, like the science way of knowing.
And, you know, with programs such as, you know, Indigenous STEAM and the camps that come with it, you know, stuff like that never did exist back when I was going through school. And, you know, now that I'm seeing stuff like that come about, you know, to have a way of an approach towards teaching the young kids and the generations about the culture, the language, and, of course, the history that follows with it and the teachings. Are you starting to see a huge influx, not only through Indigenous STEAM, but across the city of Calgary, let alone across the province, to follow suit in those steps, especially after the discovery of the 215 within Kamloops and along with the Truth and Reconciliation Movement?
Yes, I believe that the different organizations in Calgary are starting to, I don't know, have more of a voice in the community. USA, Diamond Willow, Musqueam, all of them are hosting lots of different things for youth, but also for just community, for adults as well. Myself, I actually started with my youngest son. We did a Cree lesson so that we can learn our language over the springtime last year. So.
And of course, you know, we're also starting to see a lot of things being incorporated into both films and TV shows, as well as the one thing that I remember fondly is that, you know, even in children's books now, people are taking Robert Munch books and making them into stories that are based on Cree stories and or Blackfoot stories or Dene stories, and they're having these elders come on in and to voice act, such as Wayne Jackson, of course, who has gone on to voice many of the books that teach the language for Cree and many others as well. Do you think that that should happen more often than not, just so that we can help preserve the language and also pass it down to future generations?
Absolutely. So I'm a librarian by trade, a librarian assistant by trade, and I truly love when I see Indigenous authors and stories coming through in new books. That's coming more and more every day. You see it more often. And to preserve language, I think that's very important. Something that CIFRS is doing, we are creating an app that is going to go out to schools and for teachers. It's a virtual reality app that is going to teach the Blackfoot language from the very beginning and up, so that it can be in schools. And it's like augmentation, it's augmentation reality, and it's being created. It should be ready by the end of the year.
And of course, what inspired that app to come about? Because I remember when I was in school, they used to have Native Cultural Arts at the time, but they also used to have Cree class. And at one time, they just decided not to have it anymore. Do you think that that should be also brought back into the school systems across Alberta?
I absolutely do believe that we should have, they get taught French, why not Indigenous languages as well? To be able to, for my kids to have been grown up in school, they would have the background that they need in their language. So I think that's very important. How the app came to be, Healy was one of the people that wanted to bring the Blackfoot language forward. And one of our board members, Ollie, she is with Kaleidoscope, and she has the technology background. So we joined with her, and she has helped us to start creating this. We went to three different locations in Southern Alberta. So we went to the Okotoks Erratic, We went to Head Smashed in Buffalo Jump and Writing on Stone and did some 360 visuals so that the avatar that is going to do the teachings in the program is in like traditional spaces and stuff. It's very, very powerful what this app is going to do.
That was Sheila Norris from Calgary, Alberta on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Tantu Carnell and Sheila Norris. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.